This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome to New Books in Anthropology. I'm Jeff Adler, speaking today with Christina Rocha, professor of anthropology and the director of the Religion and Society Research Cluster in Western Sydney University, Australia. We're speaking today about Christina's new book, Cool Christianity: Hillsong and the Fashioning of Cosmopolitan Identities, published by Oxford University Press in December 2023. In her new book, Christina investigates the unprecedented popularity of the Hillsong Church among the Brazilian middle class. Hillsong, as it's commonly known, is a Pentecostal megachurch that began in Australia but has since swept across the globe through its sophisticated use of social media, pop music, affiliation with celebrity culture, and its emphasis on inclusivity and tolerance, all of which make it a cool place of worship. Christina argues that the attraction of Hillsong to the Brazilian middle class, especially when contrasted with their disdain for more conservative Pentecostal churches, lies in the door it opened to the cosmopolitan lifestyle rejected by the global north. Christina Rocha, thanks for joining me today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm really pleased to be here.
Wonderful. So you've been researching the Hillsong Church since 2015. You've participated in weekly services, annual conferences, and even participated in the 10-week Hillsong Alpha course. You spoke to Hillsong members, pastors, church, and Hillsong College administrators and flew back and forth between Australia and Brazil frequently to fully understand the Hillsong experience globally and in Brazil. So given all that, why, broadly speaking, were you interested in writing this book about the rise in popularity of Hillsong among the Brazilian middle-class youth?
Thanks for that question. Well, I've been writing about transnationalism and religion for a long time, and the Brazilians overseas and foreigners going to Brazil and because of religion for a long time. So I live in Sydney, Australia, where Hillsong started. So when I was finishing a book on a Brazilian healer, John of God, who had become very famous overseas and all this, I started noticing young Brazilian international students coming to Australia because of Hillsong. And I'm like, what's Hillsong? I'm studying, you know, New Age healing, spiritual healing. And then I went to the church. I looked it up, went to the church because there were so many people telling me about Hillsong from all walks of life. And I couldn't believe what I, you know, as I entered the church and what it was and how cool it was. And I was thinking of the 80s. The first comparison that came to me was the Benetton advertisement. You probably don't remember, but you had people from, you know, like you had Africans and Asian and white people and people from all over the world really coolly dressed in Benetton clothes, and it was all about harmony and togetherness, and they were all bright-eyed and well-fed and cool, right? So I'm there and there are kids, young people from all over the world. It's mostly young people. And there was even an area for Brazilians, so reserved for Brazilians, because there were so many Brazilian students there. So the chairs were all had a little piece of paper saying reserved for the Brazilian community. So I was interested in that. What was bringing all these people to Australia to a Pentecostal church when I knew very well, studying, you know, religion in Brazil, that Pentecostalism was a religion of the poor. So 50% of Pentecostals in Brazil are poor, very poor, mostly are what we say Afro descendants. So they are black, poor, mostly women, and mostly young. So very different from the middle classes, which are mostly white and wealthy. So, and they don't really connect. There is a very big gap between the poor and the rich, or the middle classes in Brazil. And these are enforced, you know, in infrastructures in the cities where people live at different places. So these people service the middle classes. So why is it that the middle classes were coming to Australia to go to a Pentecostal church? And that started my questioning. And usually it's like that. Being an anthropologist, I'm always like asking, why are people doing things the way they do? What's their logic? Because we know that there is a logic in the ways in which people do things. And so I was just amazed by the contradictions that I could see there at the church and with these Brazilians.
Let's get right into it then. Tell us, why indeed are these Brazilian middle-class people attracted to Hillsong, and why are they flying to Australia? And if you can also go into it, why are they not into the other existing Pentecostal churches in Brazil?
Okay, so what I saw is that there is an aspiration for modernity in Brazil that is very big, very important. And I had studied that before, I had written about that before. And modernity, you know, in their perspective and in the more popular perspective, is always situated in the global north. So the global south is in the waiting history, in the waiting room of history, I would say, right? So the modernity that they aspire to, so it's not they don't have an understanding of multiple modernities, that modernity is everywhere. And so that their modernity is about speaking English, living in the global north, in the lifestyles of the global north. So a lot of people go to the US, but for even the upper middle classes, that's a bit passe, you know, going to the US, you go to more exotic places. Australia became more important in Brazil and in the world after the Olympic Games in 2000. So it started becoming more important in the media in Brazil. There are more international students from Brazil coming to Australia to study English, not to go to university, but to study English, and to New Zealand as well. And then from there, they work, and then they travel, you know, to Bali, they go surfing. So it's very cool, the whole thing about going to Australia and coming back after a year or a few years. So that's how it started, this idea that Australia is a new exotic place to go, and you can come back and tell your friends that you've seen kangaroos and koalas. And so there is this exoticism of Australia that your friends have been to, and you know, and it's a safe place as well. So criminality and violence in Brazil is very strong because of the gap between the poor and the rich. So it's an incredibly safe place to live. Like, you can have your mobile phone and not get mugged, you know, on the streets, and use your mobile phone, that kind of thing. So parents are very happy to pay for a year for their children to study English and live that kind of lifestyle and become more cosmopolitan. So there is the parent of the bank of mom and dad funding these kids to come to Australia. Now, what I saw is that there was an overlap between the church and Australia. So I talked about Australia, and let's talk about the church now. So the church subscribes to a new style of Pentecostalism that they learned in the US, but they perfected. And that's the cool Christianity style that I write about. So they have an emphasis on excellence. So everything has to be done really well. You have to look back and say, have I done this with excellence? And that's the thing that is associated with modernity in Brazil. So there is this dream of an aspiration of modernity where, you know, everything works, the traffic works, the technology works, everything is perfect in the minds of Brazilians in regards to the global north. So this emphasis on excellence has been associated in the minds of Brazilians with modernity, with perfection. That's the church we aspire. Not only that, they have, they also use digital media quite a lot. They use, as you said, music. It was music that arrived in Brazil. The Hillsong music was translated by Brazilian bands, sometimes even translated and by singers and sang and put their names in the authorship, which was not very appreciated by Hillsong music.
Yeah.
But so it was translated into Portuguese. And when the bands from the church toured the country several times, the Pentecostal young followers realized that they were singing that those songs, and they started going to these concerts and calling their friends to go to concerts. And this music became big business in Brazil via the US. So it was integrity music that is disseminated and sold. That's a Christian producer and music producer. So we have the music, we have digital media, we have branding, the celebrity pastors, and then we start having all the celebrities from the US, you know, the Jenner family, the Justin Bieber. So the pastor in the US converted Justin Bieber. So you have that buzz about this church, and Brazilians are receiving these ideas through the concerts. They don't know it's a church in the beginning. They think it's a band, and then a Christian band. And then they realize they go online, Google it, and realize it's a church. And they realize that a lot of young people have a modicum of power. They're doing things. They have ministries. They are volunteers. And they feel like in their own churches, as you ask, what's like their own churches, they have very little power. So there is a more authoritarian style in Brazil, in which the pastor and his wife really have the authority to police behavior. They're very interested in, you know, behavior and being literalist about the church, about what you're wearing, how you are behaving, about alcohol, about, you know, sex and all this. And Hillsong is a bit more flexible about that, because Hillsong is what we call a seeker church, a church that is interested in the unchurched, in the people who are not Christians, to attract them into the church. So they are the bridge between the secular world, the world of corporations, and the world, you know, of everyday work, and the work of church, and the world of church. So I'm extending a little bit, but you can see how, because they want to be relevant to young people, because more and more in the census, you see that people are ticking no religion, right? The numbers of non-religious people in the West are growing very much. Even in Brazil, it's growing. So they want to be relevant to these people. And so that's why they emphasize, they blur the secular and the sacred world there. So they use marketing techniques, business techniques. They talk about leadership. They use, you know, popular music, celebrity culture, fashion, as I talked about too. So I think there's that merge of exoticism of Australia together with an excellent church that they see as perfect. So the perfection of Australia being part of the Global North and speaking English, and the perfection of church, where you go there, it's clubbing, it's, you know, it's very beautiful.
I like that. So it's sort of a confluence of factors of Australia as this exotic other to the US. Then you have this like projection of perfection that the church puts forth. And then this general sort of like, you know, developed world lifestyle. I wanted to ask though, like, so in my own case, after I read your book, I went on YouTube and search for a few Hillsong church music videos, expecting it would be so corny and just your typical Christian band. And there's a little of that, but to your point, the production value is high. The dress is good. The people are all beautiful. I've only seen a few YouTube videos. You have spent a lot of time in the churches, in in the Hillsong College. I think it's fascinating. So can you just tell us what is it really like? What is this culture of excellence that, you know, emphasizes personal values and blurs the line between secularism and faith? What really is it like on the ground?
So you go into the lobby, for example, in Australia, and in Australia, in Sydney, you have the headquarters, the big headquarters, right? And they are like a corporate building. So you see the building is all steel and glass and beautifully made. They have the college building has, you know, a few years ago when they opened it, they had tours for people. You know, so I went on a tour and they had little iPads outside to book the room to, you know, and they had the best, like we don't have that at university, the best Zoom things and all sorts of technologies inside the building. And then the music room. And then they had, for example, a room for parents who had kids with disabilities and autistic kids. They had rooms were all padded with, you know, hammocks, little things that would be good for these kids. And they had somebody there to look after the kids when their parents went into the service. They have so that is a caring thing, right? The parents finally have an hour and a half of peace knowing that the kids are there. And even if you don't have kids and you see that, you think, love, right? There's love for others. So one of the big things besides excellence is the love. So we love others, we love God, we love people, right? So rather than you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't drink, you can't wear your skirt like that or all this or color your hair or have your tattoos, it's love. So this is back going back a little bit with the Brazilians, that's very big. But anyway, so you go into the lobby. So there is the headquarters, but there is also another place near Central Station where the international students are. And I will talk more about this because that's where I did my research and the college is there as well. The lobby is, there's a cafe, you know, there is a shop. So, you know, with pens, mugs, Bibles, all sorts of Bibles, Minecraft Bible for, you know, spiritual ideas, Bible for all in, you know, in manga, all sorts of Bibles. There are, you know, the bathrooms are incredibly clean because there are volunteers there all the time. There's a reception area where if you don't speak the language, if you don't speak English, you can get a little speaker, a little headphone where volunteers will translate the service for you, not the songs, but the service. And so there's a buzz. You get there. There's a bus from Central Station. So you take the train, the young, you know, international students take the metro to Central Station, and then there's a shuttle bus to the church, and the shuttle bus is already very exciting. Everybody's talking to everyone. We're getting there, and then we wait for, you know, the exact moment. If it's service at 7 o'clock at night, usually that's when the Brazilians go. So 7 o'clock starts at 7, and it's 7 to 7:30 and finishes at 7:30. They have a little digital clock at the back of the audience, so the people on the stage, on the platform can see the clock, and they will, you know, be on time to the second, which is pretty amazing for Brazilians. And the whole punctuality thing is difficult for Brazilians. So they are like, wow. How do they do that? So that's excellence as well. And caring for people because they know people have other things to do. So the service doesn't, you know. But and then they open the doors, the big doors to go into the service area. And so you have all these people coming out. And then you have all these people rushing in to save places for your friends. So you know, you put your bag, you put your jumper, your sweater, and you save places. So it's like going to a concert, going clubbing. It's dark, you have the lights, and then when the service starts, there's a countdown, 10 to 1, and then the lights go off, and then everybody screams, and then the lights go on, and the music starts. And we'll have like 20 minutes of music, sometimes more exciting. In the beginning, it's pretty exciting. People rush to the front of the platform, the stage, and young people are jumping up and down and have lots of energy. And then there are quieter songs. So there is that, you know, dynamic of explosion and then introspection. And then people go back to their chairs. And then there is a service and then more music at the end. And then after that, we go back to the cafe area. There is, you know, tables there and people hang out for an hour and a half until they say, you know, shouldn't go, you know, 9:30, you guys should go home, 10 o'clock, we're closing. This is the last bus to Century Station, the last shuttle bus. So it is a time of community. It's a time of meeting other people, of hanging out, of finding about, you know, just what you do, jobs, accommodation, you know, visas, how you did that, and, you know, and making friends for people who are alone in Australia, right, as international students. But even families, you know, meeting other families as well.
Well, that was an amazing description. Thank you for that vivid walkthrough. I feel like I really understand it now. And I feel like the way you described it matches one thing that really stood out in the book, which is you sort of contributing this personal element. You said that this emphasis on love appeals to Brazilians. You said the punctuality appeals and community and friends. Like, who doesn't want those things? And, you know, you mentioned the book, how you grew up in Brazil, you had some of these similar aspirations, you wanted maybe some of these things that the Hillsong offers. So I just wondered if you could talk about how it was studying Hillsong, given your own background and what your feeling was about, not just at the economic level, but at a kind of personal level. What is Hillsong really doing for these youth?
Look, So I grew up in São Paulo, a megalopolis, even at that time. And I went as an exchange student to the U.S. and I learned English there. And there was this aspiration to, as part of the middle classes, of speaking English, of being cosmopolitan, of being a citizen of the world. And the difficulties of being alone, right? You're not traveling with your family. You're young. Sometimes they're 17, 18. I was 17 and spent a year away from your family at a time when there was no internet. So a letter would take 2 weeks to get to my family in Brazil and then 2 weeks back. So it would be, you know, a month. Once a month, I would receive letters from friends and family. Even newspapers, you know, there was no internet. So my parents would put newspapers inside or magazines, you know, so I would know what was going on in Brazil. So there was very much that separation, that really experiencing being by yourself and really having to grow up very fast. And that's, if we are thinking of experience, similar experience, that's what I see with these young people. Of course, there is internet and they can talk on WhatsApp with their families for hours for free and friends. And they're still, you know, very much embedded in Brazil and Australia. But at the same time, middle class kids in Brazil, they don't work until they finish university and find a proper job. Because there is an immense unskilled workforce that will work in, you know, in cafes and supermarkets and everything else. You know, I was shocked in America the first time I was went to the supermarket and I saw people from my school working in the supermarket. I had never seen that in my life. You know, like middle class people don't work in these kind of unskilled jobs because you have all these unskilled people now. So, and they can't really live by themselves because structurally is very difficult. The rental market, you have to rent for 3 years. You have to have a salary to show, you know, the real estate agent that you have a salary. So you can't really move out of your parents' home until you have a proper job after university. So everything is delayed. And I was seeing that these kids had to, for the first time, to find accommodation, to work, to have a work ethic, punctuality. They had to learn a lot of things very quickly. And they had to cook. A lot of the kids didn't know, the young people didn't know how to cook. So they were saying, oh, we go to a Thai restaurant because it's similar, because we have vegetables and rice and, you know, the idea that you have rice. And so they didn't even know how to cook. So that, in a way, you know, I could see their difficulties that they were finding. And I didn't grow up in religion, so I knew very little about Christianity. And I've done research on Buddhism, and I had to learn about Buddhism. I, you know, did research on faith healing, spiritualism, had to learn about that. And I had to learn about Christianity. So they had courses at the church. And I did research with a migrant church, a Brazilian church, a smaller Brazilian church. And it was really interesting to see how these young Brazilians would go to the Brazilian church to feel at home, to speak Portuguese, to find out about accommodation, jobs, and to feel more at home. And then would go to Hillsong. Once they were more established, they would go to Hillsong because they wanted to integrate. They wanted to learn English. They wanted to meet all the people from all over the world. So I didn't, so I took some courses, you know, and Bible studies at the church, these two churches. And that was very important because more and more anthropology is realizing that we have to have some kind of dialogue with theology. We have to understand what these people believe and their practices, why they do things the way they do, right? That's the main thing of anthropology, is to understand the logic, the practices, the rituals. And without this substrate of theology, you can't understand, you know, what's going on there just from a secular perspective. And it's important to engage with that. So that was very helpful. And yes, I understood their plight, but at the same time, that was never the way I dealt with that when I was in the US, or when I lived in Japan. When I was in Japan, I was never into religion to help me think through my life. But these kids, these young people, that's the way they did this.
Okay, so let's get a little more into this process of this kind of pilgrimage from Brazil to Australia, be it to the migrant church, to the Hillsong church. And then you talk a lot about the process of going back to Brazil and how that is kind of a hard, almost like, you know, reverse culture shock sort of feeling. So what are the skills they're learning? What to make your connection with theology? What is the spiritual doctrines that they're focusing on? And how does it affect them when they go back to Brazil?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that there is a circulation of ideas and people and objects between Brazil and Australia. So it's not that, you know, like I chose to start the book from, you know, their fandom. They become fans of the church and the band, and they go to Australia and then they come back to Brazil. But actually, there is a constant flow of people going to the conferences, Hillsong conferences once a year, coming for, you know, a few months, or coming for a whole year, or and then going back, or going back for holidays. It's all on digital media, on Instagram, you know, they post things on WhatsApp. So there's this constant movement. But let's talk about what happens when they come back. So when they go, they aspire to change themselves, to learn a better way of being Christian, one that is more moral in their idea, that their sense that it's not focused on money, right? A lot of the churches in Brazil, Pentecostal churches, are focused on donations of money, of prosperity theology, the idea of success. But it's not an abstract success of the middle class. It's a pretty concrete thing. I want a house, I want a car, I want a job. So the pastors, particularly the Universal Church of the Kingdom of God, which is a mega church in Brazil, has branches all over the world. And these Brazilian middle class young people were always saying, oh, the Universal Church is the worst, because they really, the pastors are becoming really rich and they really exploit the poor. So they go to Australia trying to find a better way of being Christian, a better church, a way of doing church. So it's about transforming themselves, being better Christians, more focused on love and morality, and in the sense of love and kindness and grace, rather than what they have in Brazil in these churches. But also they want to transform Brazil, transform the churches in Brazil. So there is a personal transformation, which is very Pentecostal, and a church transformation and a nation transformation, right? Which is also the Great Commission. You get more followers of Jesus, but you change your country. Well, they learn all these things. They see the big pastors working in the church, putting chairs, doing things without any feeling, because that's very Australian too, not to have so much hierarchy. And then they go back to Brazil, where bureaucracy, hierarchy, patriarchy is really strong. And they argue and ask the pastors to do things. But for example, the women are very disappointed because they can only work with kids. And one woman told me, look, I don't like kids. It's not my thing. I learned how to do TV and video and editing at Hillsong College, because they teach creative industries there. And I want to do that for my church, because then I'll put on social media, the church will grow. But the pastors won't let me do that because they want me to work with kids, because I'm a woman and I'm unmarried. So there was a lot of this. They said, well, we can't change anything because they only put me to change the youth services. I can't change the main services. The main services are long, boring. You know, the pastor will get the Holy Spirit and speak for 3 hours when it should be only an hour and a half, so people can go home and do other things and go off and have a good Sunday. So there was all these difficulties of structural difficulties. But also one young man told me, well, my father's church was in trouble. It was not going well. So I came back after 3 years of college at Hillsong. I studied there and I was ready to implement things, and they wanted that. But then I got there and nobody wanted to change things, because the pastors had privileges. So, you know, they would show up, they would do their thing. And this guy wanted everything planned. He wanted the songs organized. He wanted a different way, even the way on the platform, which is the stage for the services. They wanted to change that and put just a little lectern, acrylic, transparent, so you can't really, it's not obtrusive or, you know, intrusive. And so they couldn't even change that. Of course, now more and more churches are copying Hillsong. That's what I saw. Even the logo, there is a mega church in Brazil called Lagoinha, and they changed the logo. It's very similar to Hillsong, the same colors, the same style, everything. And most churches now have things that are similar to Hillsong, but they're still authoritarian. The pastors still have them, you know, and they still focus on money and focus on behavior. And that's one of what young people said, you know, it's not so much on what you're dressed as or your tattoos. It's about grace. It's about love. It's about caring for other people. They wanted to change the world. So there is that too.
Okay. So Hillsong is sort of disrupting the religious political order in Brazil. To that end, do you want to speak at all about you speak in the book about some of the challenges that Hillsong faced when they, I can't remember the time period you said, but when they start their first church in Sao Paulo, and how they had to sort of fine tune certain aspects of it to Brazil.
Yeah. So one thing, well, there is culture, right? The culture of the place. So religion is part of culture. It's not separate. So the it's one I interviewed one young man in Australia, and he said, "Oh, when Hillsong goes there, it's gonna be very hard because they have to change, make a crowd into a family. They have here it's easy because we have the outside culture that is very much more relaxed and all this, and over there it's gonna be hard." Another one said, "Well, when in Hillsong," so I interviewed people before Hillsong established the first branch in 2016. So they were all thinking that it was going to come. They didn't know when exactly. And this other woman said it's going to be very hard because they have a gringo mentality, so a foreign mentality that people, if the people are responsible, if you have a ministry, if you have something that you have to do, you're leading people to put the chairs before service, in place. Or whatever it is, cleaning the toilets, whatever it is that you are volunteering, if you have that commitment and you can't come, you're gonna call a day before and say, "Look, I can't come. Can you? I found somebody else who will fill in for me." Now, she said, in Brazil, people are not gonna show up. And that's it. So when, it starts, it's not gonna be excellent. Now, the big thing about Hillsong, as I said in the beginning, is that there is this experience, right? You have to have that experience of the service. Lots of people jumping up and down, the music, the experience. Pentecostalism is all about experiencing the Holy Spirit, experiencing God within you, right? Or next to you, telling you what to do. So the music induces that experience. So the difficulties were very clear. The first one was that they had to teach, because it's a secret church, that it's a church for the unchurched, they had to tell other pastors that they were not there to steal their congregation. So, which they ha what happened, of course,
Yeah.
happened all the time. But they went on a good relations tour around Brazil in churches, talking, giving talks. And these are Brazilians who have studied for 3 years at Hillsong College, then studied in a Bachelor of Theology in another, in the Pentecostal official college. And they had been asked by the then global senior pastor, Brian Houston, to go to Brazil and establish the church. So they were back in Brazil, and they were going around preaching as visitors, as guests in other churches, to say that they were there not to steal people, but to bring more people in. And as they did that, they had to wait for a year or a year and a half to get enough people, enough volunteers to reproduce that experience of almost ecstasy of being in a dark room with lots of people, and everything goes, so well. Everything is so, how would you say, perfectly timed that it's excellent. So to reproduce that excellence in the experience of Hillsong, it took a long time. So they had to train the volunteers. One of the things they had to do is to change their language. So you can't just say, "Hello, brothers and sisters, God be with you." They wanted not to frighten people who were not churched. So they would tell them, "Look, we are not going to call this service. We're going to call this a meeting. We're not going to say, 'Welcome, brothers and sisters, to the house of God,' because that's not cool. We're going to say, 'Welcome to church.' And we're going to give them new people. We're going to give them coffee afterwards," which is not really a thing in Brazil, but it's very much in Australia to have a, like, wow, a free coffee, a free latte or a flat white, So they're reproducing the model of Australia. And then also that they would not interfere in politics, talk about politics. And that was very important for them. Even though most Pentecostalists are right wing, many a lot of the big pastors in Brazil supported the election of the former president, far-right president Bolsonaro, Jair Bolsonaro. They were not into politics because they said, we have people from all sorts of all walks of life coming in. We don't want to, you know, divide people. We want to get people together. And we don't want power to interfere here. So we don't want, you know, you're with your little power, which is very typical of Brazil. You have a little power, you know, of are you the leader of putting the chairs or cleaning the bathroom, as I said, or putting the instruments on the stage or whatever it is, your little power, or the car park. There will be people with signs saying welcome to church at the car park. If you're a leader there, you're not going to humiliate other people and tell other people what to do. We do it together. So it's a different kind of leadership. So there's all these things that they had to teach people to create that experience of excellence, of clubbing, of branding. There is a brand that they had to, just like any brand, that they had to uphold, right? So these were the difficulties, yeah.
I'm curious, that commitment they originally made, that they would not be political, that they would be, you know, agnostic when it came to Bolsonaro, whatever it might be, how has that aspect panned out? I mean, clearly, they, like you said, they promised not to steal other churches' followers. They did that in troves. So how is this commitment for them to stay apolitical? How has that kind of developed?
They upheld that. I think okay. They didn't invite any politicians in, even though Brian Houston, when he was the senior global pastor, he went and to the White House when Trump was in the White House and took that famous picture of all the Pentecostal leaders, you know, blessing or healing or putting their hands, you know, laying on hands on Trump. And Brian Houston is right there, right? But that's not the case in Brazil. They knew how divisive it was. It was just terrible what was happening in Brazil in 2018 during the election year and afterwards. So they did, you know, have that. Yeah. They didn't.
Okay. Well, that's actually a good transition into a touchy topic, but I feel like it does have to be mentioned. You know, you just said that Hillsong was kind of shielded from the ambient political environment in Brazil. And one thing you talk about in the book, which I thought was fascinating, is that if anyone listening has heard of Hillsong, they're likely to hear about these scandals. And so what I'd love to talk about is first, you know, review what happened, but more to the point, more interesting, is you said that uniquely in Brazil, Hillsong's reputation in these scandals wasn't as tarnished, was a little more resilient than it was in other places where Hillsong is prominent. So I hope you can talk about that.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that it's mostly in the US and in Australia where the fallout happened, right? We know.
Let's first go over what happened.
Okay. The first thing that happened was Carl Lentz, the big pastor, celebrity pastor in New York. He studied at Hillsong College. He was a friend of Brian Houston and Bobby Houston's son, and he established Hillsong New York. Now, he was a cool pastor, definitely. He's the one who converted Justin Bieber. He was on Oprah. He was, you know, people took pictures of him with his shirt off and he was all buff. Well, we say in French, tablet de chocolat. He was all, you know, very strong and with Justin Bieber, even cooler than Justin Bieber. This is a guy who dresses, you know, a trendy fashion, real, like he's a fashionable guy. And then there were lots of rumors, then big scandals. He had affairs. He was using the church money to be wined and dined all the celebrities. He had a green room where they would meet before church and have all this incredible food and different merchandise he would give to celebrities, so the bags, the jackets, the whatever. And there was even a place at the church at the front reserved for the celebrities when they came, the models, the, you know, the fashion people. And so all these came out. And so there was a, they fired him, and that was a big thing. And then there were other churches that had been engulfed by Hillsong, regular big churches in the U.S. that had willingly become part of the network of Hillsong. And they then, well, Justin Bieber left, Selena Gomez left, and, you know, and so all these other churches left. In Australia, you know, the media had been always, you know, having terrible critical articles about Hillsong, about money, about, you know, how they lived the high life. They had flats. The senior pastors were always flying first class. They had a flat in New York then. And it was just, you know, this money thing. And so there was a lot of that happening. And then Brian Houston is fired himself by the board and the elders, right? The board of elders. So because of scandals as well, that he was drinking, taking medicine and mixing. I don't, you know, these things are very blurred, what he was doing. If there was the medicine. But that is that they fired him. He had spent 40 minutes in a room with a woman in a hotel during the conference that is in Olympic Park. So there are hotels around, and they were staying in a hotel to be there early. And so he was drunk and went into this woman's room instead of, because he didn't have his keys, instead of going to front desk and getting a key, a second key, right? This is all blurred and stuff. So he was fired. So that was a big thing. And they have a new pastor couple who is the senior global pastor as well. Now, in Australia, this was big, and they've lost a lot of followers. They lost the congregation. It became very small. The college, smaller now, declining numbers, declining revenue in the U.S. as well, even more so, where capitalism is so developed, consumer capitalism is so developed, and it was all about consumer capitalism and celebrity culture and branding. Very strong there, but not so much around the rest of the world, I would say, particularly the non-English speaking world. So in Brazil and in other parts of the world, you have your local pastors anyway, that these are the pastors that people relate to, right? So you have the Brazilian pastors in Brazil, and you have also the Australian Argentinian pastor who's in charge of South America and who lives in Buenos Aires, who opened the Buenos Aires branch. So this is one thing that protects other branches, that they have their own local pastors where they are. Brian Houston had been to Brazil only once before the church was opened, during the time that they were preparing the church and giving talks and stuff. So that protects them. Also, the language protects them, because English is not the, you know, what language people speak, and not so many people speak English in Brazil. So they don't really know exactly what's happening in Australia. And if they control the narrative, and Hillsong did control the narrative really well. They made little films, little video clips to show its service in Brazil and other parts of the world, saying, this is what happened. You know, there was a problem. We have new pastors because there was a problem, and it's important that we are transparent. And that's what Brazilians thought was wonderful, actually, because there had been so many scandals with Pentecostal pastors in Brazil, with money scandals, sexual abuse scandals, and, you know, and these pastors are still there. Nothing happens to them. But with Hillsong, they had this responsibility, this transparency, that they fired out the founder of the church. And they thought, this is incredible. So one of the things they thought was that this church was really a moral church with, you know, that they would take responsibility and fire their people, their top people. The second thing is that, what was that I was going to say? They thought the narrative falls very well into a theological narrative of the devil. You know, if you are very successful, the devil is always tempting you, the enemy. So that is, again, one thing, you know, the enemy is tempting this church because this church is so good that, of course, there is a devil attack. There is an attack there. And so this church is protecting itself. So that was a very good narrative. And the church in Brazil opened another branch, another campus in Sao Paulo again. So it is growing. If you have two campuses, it's pretty much. And like now they're going to have a little event and they have a constant circulation. I think this is important to say, of new song pastors passing through Buenos Aires and then Brazil, you know, the two big campuses or branches in South America and going somewhere else. So they preach on the platform and they are translated by the Brazilians. So one of the things the Brazilians say, wow, you know, either the guy from Buenos Aires comes and you practice your Spanish or you practice your English. So there is still that feeling of being a foreign church in our territory, an exciting church where people speak English, where you're going to meet people from different parts of the world, where there are always people coming and going. So it's a mega church, you know, and so it's the same thing. There is a cafe, and what is interesting too is that the church in Brazil, it's as everywhere in the world, is in the nightclub, right? In a clubbing place, because they hire on Sunday where nothing happens. And there are bands and events and things happening during the week in a very upmarket place, very expensive place to go. But on Sundays free is where the services happen. So I think they were able to control the narrative from the point of view of Hillsong through these video clips that they made. But also the Brazilians were really praising Hillsong for the way in which they behaved in face of a crisis. So very different. And they, you know, and they have things that they think that they value that for Americans, you know, like they speak English. Well, Americans speak English. Americans have lots of mega churches that are like that as well. So there's nothing much there for them and they can leave or, you know, give and take. But for Brazilians, it's a very special place in Brazil to be.
That really is fascinating that they're able to essentially leverage these scandals to kind of prove their morality of, look, we're owning up to it. So compared to these local pastors who do all these scandals, nothing happens to them, we're pretty great.
Let me just tell you a scandal which I find fascinating.
Go for it.
From Renascer Church, which is it's a middle-class church, not an upper-middle-class church like Hillsong. So it's and, you know, they go to the U.S. Now, the Brazilian federal police tips the FBI. They arrive in the U.S. in their little plane, and they have more than 10... When you cross borders, you have to declare if you have more than $10,000, right? With you. That's usual. So they had like, I don't know how much, but they had a lot of money and they were carrying this money into America for money laundering. So the FBI nabbed them as they arrived, you know. And so they spent time in jail, but because they had kids, so they spent, like, the husband spent time in jail and then the wife went into jail, right? For money laundering and not declaring. And then they went back to Brazil and they're there. You know, pastoring.
I see. So I see. So that fits a nice picture.
Yeah, Kaká, you know, it was a very famous soccer player, Kaká. And he was part of this church. He left the church. He was, you know, disgusted and all this. So people do leave, but they're still big. Renascer is still there.
I see. So Hillsong looks pretty good, all things considered. Well, as a final question, I kind of want to zoom out. And this is actually a nice place to do it, because as you're saying, you know, in the global north, these scandals really racked Hillsong and its popularity diminished, but it kind of survived and still has this kind of transnational character to it with Argentina and Brazil. But so with this backdrop of the global north, global south, I mean, what did you think? What is the spread of Hillsong? What is its resilience? What does this whole phenomenon tell us about faith in a global, digital, post-secular age, you know, more broadly?
I think that we have to look at affect or emotions, right? It's important that in studying particularly youth cultures, but also, you know, in studying culture, we have to look what excites people, what gives pride and pleasure to people, right? And how this propels them to move. So I am moving a little bit from religion and with religion. So this is a religion that is about experience, is about feeling God talk as a best friend, as a father figure. So it's not a God that is harsh only or authoritarian only. It's this God that is your best friend who wants you, the best for you. Very much like self-help a bit, overlaps a bit with, sure, you know, with New Age and human development, therapeutic cultures and personal, emotional faith. So there is that, the experience, the emotional faith. But I think that because of the intense use of digital media, of social media, I would say, of this focus on love and grace, this focus on aspiration and dreams, right? So emotion, dreams, excitement. There's a part of the book that I talk about K-pop and how similar, in a way, K-pop, the global phenomenon of K-pop is to the global phenomenon of Hillsong. So branding is about creating an identity for yourself, identifying with the brand as a warm, you know, fuzzy feeling that you have. So I think what it says about today is about how there is still a symmetry of power in the world. We have to look at differences of power, and we have to look at how religion has to do with emotion, with aspiration, with dreams of a life that can be otherwise, either, you know, Buddhism as well or other religions. It's about transforming your life and transforming the society that we live in. We are in a situation now with the planet, with global warming, climate change, climate catastrophe, economic crisis, you know, a housing crisis all over the world. And this is, I see all over the world, really. We have young people who are disaffected and thinking there's no future. We are going back to the punk times, but pretty real that there is no future. And so people have aspirations of how to change. Some people go into, you know, the environmental movement. Some people go into religion. I am opening up very much, instead of thinking only of religion, but these ways of people dealing with transformation, change, aspirations, and dreams of a life that can be otherwise. And I think this excitement for Hillsong, and I don't talk about only about Brazil. I've written about how the African diasporas in Australia, many of them go to Hillsong as well, as because they've known Hillsong in their countries in Africa, right? Hillsong is famous there too, and they come to Australia, and that's the place that they feel at home as well, because they know the style. For some of the people, for more middle class sectors of society, who come here, not all, of course. And they do something like, you know, hopping from the African churches to Hillsong. So I think Pentecostalism in this way gives offers this place where you can think of transforming your life of a more personal experience of God, of transformation. But of course, you know, the ways in which religion is in the digital age is about this excitement. It's about creating this affect, this experience of God, I think.
Okay.
And how to change your life. Yeah.
I think that's a great place to leave off. People are looking for opportunities for change in a uncertain future, let us say. Thank you so much, Christina. This was wonderful. I recommend everyone check out her book, Cool Christianity.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It's been wonderful to be able to talk about this and ponder, you know, and as we talk, we remember things and think of new things, you know, to ways of looking at the world. So it's really wonderful. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Absolutely.